Good evening. Welcome to tonight's council meeting. It gives me great pleasure to welcome everybody here this evening. My name is Paula Reet, Mayor of Kingborough. Being 5:30pm, I now officially declare the meeting open, and welcome to those people who are in our public gallery this evening and also to those who are watching along at home. I wish to advise that council meetings are recorded and made publicly available on our website. Meetings are also live streamed on YouTube. And in accordance with Council's policy, I'll ask the CEO to confirm that the audio recording has started. Thank you. I wish to acknowledge the traditional custodians of this land, pay respects to elders past and present, and also acknowledge today's Tasmanian Aboriginal community. Our attendees this evening are myself, Councillor Reet, the Deputy Mayor, Councillor Gladewright, Councillor Antoli, Councillor Bain, Councillor Dean, Councillor Fox, Councillor Midgley, Councillor Richardson, Councillor Street. From our staff this evening, we have the CEO, Mr Stewart, Director of People and Finance, Mr Spinks, Director of Governance, Recreation and Property Services, Mr Smee, Director of Engineering Services, Mr Reeve, Director of Environment Development and Community Services, Ms Shakuti, and Media and Communications Advisor, Ms Adams, and the Executive Assistant, Mrs Morton. We have apologies this evening from Councillor Cordova. Staying on page one, I'm looking for a mover and a seconder that the minutes of the open session of Council Meeting number 16 held on the 2nd of September 2024 be confirmed as a true record. I've got a mover in Councillor Fox and a seconder in Councillor Gladewright. All those in favour? Against? Motion is carried. Workshops held since the last Council meeting. We held a workshop last Monday evening, the 9th of September, in relation to integrated transport strategy. Takes us to page two, declarations of interest. Does anyone have an interest that they would like to declare? CEO.
I declare an interest with one of the items in closed session.
Thank you. Transfer of agenda items. Is there any item on the agenda that a councillor would like to transfer from open into closed session or closed into open session? No, thank you. Takes us to questions without notice from the public. And just as a reminder before we go to those, just wanted to remind members of the public that a question is not to be debated. There's to be no discussion, preamble or embellishment of any question asked without notice. And the chairperson may require that a member of the public immediately put the question. So having said that, I'd like to invite anyone to come forward and ask a question. Thank you. If you could just turn the microphone on, and then it's just stating your name and the suburb from which you come before you ask a question. Oh, it's not working. Apologies.
Thank you. So my name's Valeska Winter from Blackmans Bay. The first few questions I have are just follow up in relation to the questions I'd asked on notice, so thank you for providing a response. Question one on my list of questions was in relation to Council's actions in response to some breaches of a planning permit. The response provided only partially addressed the question, and I wondered if you could confirm what action has been taken by the planning authority to address the failed landscaping at the site following my request for investigation and action on the 28th of May.
Thank you. Who's going to help us with that? Mr. Smee. Thank you.
Through you, Mayor, we'd need to take that on notice. I only deal with the property aspects of that matter.
Thank you. Question seven was in relation to my wondering about how Council were unclear about the correct location of the Suncoast Headlands walking track. Mm-hmm. The response provided stated that Council wasn't unclear about the correct location. Therefore, my follow-up questions are, if Council was not unclear about the correct location of the track, why did the planning officer report for the recycled water treatment plant development application include incorrect information about the location of the track, including a map?
Mr. interests me?
Through you, Mayor, I think the answer to that question is that there were departments in council that were clear in relation to the correct alignment, but clearly not every staff member in council was aware. And, for example, planners who rely on what is on title, and what was on title, as you're aware, was incorrect, and that was what clearly the planners have relied on. But my answer referred to the fact that certainly from a property department perspective, the alignment was known.
Thank you. Following on from that, if council wasn't unclear about the correct location of the track, why did it take weeks of correspondence between residents and council, including us providing council's information back to you, to eventually concede that we were actually correct about our understanding of where the track was located?
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor, I think at the heart of this issue has been that there has been unimpeded public access across the Tazewater land, and that has meant that the public have been able to walk across what would have been the correct alignment of the track. Had Tazewater sought to restrict access to the easement only, this issue would have come to light a lot earlier. But clearly, with the passage of time and the fact that there has been unimpeded public access, the public have walked over what would be the correct easement. That then becomes assumed that it is the easement, and hence the confusion it caused.
Thank you. I'm aware that we can't debate that, but I guess I still don't feel like that's totally answered my question, because my question is why did it take so much correspondence and communication from residents back to council, including providing copies of council documentation back to you, for you to confirm that we were correct? I feel that that still probably hasn't answered that question.
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor, I guess it has taken correspondence between council staff, between council departments and with Tazewater to unravel what has happened with this, and that took some time. Clearly, not everyone in council has been privy to the history of this, and then it did take some time to get the people with the correct answers to provide the correct information. But you know, the process of determining the correct information, yes, did take some time. As to why, I suspect it's because that the right people needed to be asked the right questions.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Based on the responses to my questions on notice, I understand when the land was sold, the council updated their records and their systems with information about the correct location of the track. And I understand from that the responses that planning officers referred not just to the land title, but apparently referred to the information held in council records about the location of the track. Therefore, I'm wondering why I had a direct response from planning officers that also incorrectly claimed the route that the community use was simply there from historic use and it's traversing private land.
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor, difficult for me to comment on what might have transpired with staff that aren't in my department, but certainly the confusion in relation to the alignment of the track comes from when you view the title and there is a easement on title that was put in the wrong location, and that would have been the starting point for any planning officer reviewing the matter would be to go with what has been put on title. but I can't comment on individual emails or comments that have been made on the matter.
Thank you. Question 8 on my questions on notice was in relation to the involvement of council in realigning the walking track to the temporary and the permanent locations. The response provided was quite brief and I felt only partially addressed my question. I'd asked for specific information about what involvement council had, for example, installing the fencing, signage and ensuring the walking track location was safe for public use. So could you confirm any specific actions that council actually took separate to what TAS Water did?
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor, very difficult given that we're talking about actions that happened some 7 years ago now and staff that may have been involved who are no longer here. But certainly, in answering that question, the investigation that I did indicated that staff met with TAS Water. There was discussion around the temporary fencing that would be put up in relation to the what was supposed to be a temporary alignment of the track, and there has been more recent discussion with TAS Water in relation to correcting what was clearly an incorrect alignment of the track.
Thank you. Question 10 was in relation to how the walking track location actually does appear in the correct location as it's used on the list map. And the response provided confirmed that the list is updated with information provided by council. And I wondered, could you please confirm specifically what information was provided by council in order to update the list map?
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor. So council's GIS system links to list map. So our GIS officer would have provided that information that then gets reflected in list map.
Okay, thank you. And different questions, so that's the end of my questions to follow up on questions on notice. I wondered if you could confirm who holds the delegation to maintain Kingborough Council's municipal map under Section 208 of the Local Government Highways Act 1982.
Everyone's looking at one another. I feel like the most eyes were landing on Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Mayor. My understanding that would be with the CEO who actually holds that delegation, so unless it's actually been on delegated down, then it may still sit there. But I'd probably just err on the side of caution, take that one on notice.
Thank you. Thank you. When selling the parcel of land at 112 Tinderbox to TAS Water, it's 9 hectares in total. I'm curious why the decision was made to sell the entire parcel rather than actually subdividing most of it to sell and keeping the sections related to the Suncoast Dog Park and the Suncoast Headlands walking track.
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor, certainly obtaining the whole title was TAS Water's preference, and it was to do with being able to maintain a buffer zone between the plant and adjoining residences, and I guess being able to control that particular aspect. If it was owned by TAS Water, then they would ensure that that buffer zone could be maintained. If it was owned by others, council included, TAS Water didn't have that same level of surety, so my recollection is that was their reasoning for wanting to obtain the whole title.
Thank you. And could I just clarify, when you talk about buffer zone, is that in terms of the required, I don't know how to say it, but attenuation zone, or is that, are you talking about a different buffer?
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mel, I'm not talking any statutory buffer zone. It may be a statutory one. It was certainly if I put it another way, it was to maximise the amount of land available between the treatment plant and neighbouring residences. Now, at the time, I do recall that being described as a buffer. Whether that's a statutory buffer or not, I couldn't say.
Thank you. When assessing and approving a development application, in an instance such as this one that has happened, where unfortunately council have relied on incorrect information from within their own records, not due to a mistake by the applicant or intentional misleading, what options are there available to council to address this?
It's just me.
Through you, Mayor, it's a difficult question to answer. There are obviously some processes here that could be improved, but in saying that, the processes aren't necessarily all those that council have control over. I think, as I've indicated before, the registration of the easement on title was done by Taswater without reference to council. Now, had there been a requirement for council to sign off on the easement that ultimately was in our favour, it would have been then picked up that this easement's in the wrong location. But Taswater were able to do that without there being a requirement in that process for council to provide any validation of the alignment of the easement. So that's certainly one element of the process that there's an opportunity for improvement, but it's one that currently sits with the Lands Titles Office rather than council to improve.
Thank you. And if council as the planning authority are aware that the granting of a permit will actually result in the breach of conditions for another active planning permit at the same site, would you still usually approve the planning permit?
It's just me.
Through you, Mayor, I think it's a hypothetical question. Planning permit, the planning application was assessed based on the known detail on the title at the time. Had the title shown a different easement, it's quite conceivable that Taswater and the developer could have come to council and there could have been a discussion around relocating that easement, for example, but I guess we're getting into a debate that's purely hypothetical.
Thank you. And my final questions was around minor amendments. And I'm aware that they can only be approved if it does not change the use or development for which the permit was issued, other than a minor change to the description or use of the development, or if it does not cause detriment to any person. I've got three questions. I wondered, what does council consider something to be a detriment to any person? How do you determine whether it causes a detriment? And if you could provide some examples on what council considers to just be a minor change to the description or use of a development.
Ms. Shakuti, did you want to answer that?
Thank you, through you, Mayor. In terms of determining the detriment to any person for a minor amendment, it depends on the particular amendment applied for. And the situation or the potential impacts that it might have to surrounding land owners. And it's also made in reference to the particular, parts of the scheme that apply for that minor amendment. So it's hard to answer that in a categorical way. In terms of minor amendments that we would consider fairly typical, for example, it might be amendment to design. For example, it might be a facility that has certain operating hours, might apply to extend those operating hours, extensions to buildings, etc.
Thank you. The second question there was, how do you determine it? I guess that's probably hard as well, but could you elaborate on that anymore, or is that difficult?
Ms. Shakuti.
Through you, Mayor. Sorry, how do we determine
whether something would cause detriment to any person?
It would be in relation to the use and enjoyment generally the adjoining properties would be a key consideration. So, for example, if a change to the activity was to create higher levels of noise for extended hours, we would consider that, for example, potentially a detriment to the use of enjoyment of that property. Other examples might be fettering access and that type of thing. So there's many, many different examples, and it really depends on the particular section of the planning scheme that we are looking at as well.
Thank you. That are all my questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any further questions from the gallery? No, thank you very much. It takes us to page 2, questions on notice from the public, and there were some questions from Ms. Winter in relation to the Suncoast Headlands walking track, with a response from Mr. Smee and also Ms. Tyler Moore. And if members of the community did want to put some questions on notice, you can do that by completing the form that we have online or by emailing us at casey@kingborough.tas.gov.au. Takes us to questions without notice from councillors. Does any councillor have a question without notice? Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, pardon me. Thank you, Mayor. I noticed that some people this week were using or sitting at the bus stop on the Channel Highway that is currently not in use. Is the bus stop now operational for use? Could I get an update on that?
No, it is not. They were just sitting there.
They were just sitting there.
They were sitting there. They were not waiting for a bus.
Right. I was living in hope.
You were, as we all were. Mr. Smee, did you want to provide an update? No, it's Mr. Reeve. No? Mr. Stewart. Anyone?
No one wants to touch it.
Through you, Mayor. I think I've
won. I was going to Mr. Spinks next.
Yeah, I think I've won the lottery to answer that one. So as recently as today, I've had correspondence with the General Manager from Department of State Growth on that bus stop. We have feedback through from the operators. The next stage will be spending time on site with them to really make sure that together we understand what the calibration of the bus stop is, what the operational requirements will be at that site, so there can be no further debate about what's right or wrong, and then we'll be moving to final delivery of minor changes at that site to make it operational. So we're getting close.
And for the record, council is confident that the delays have nothing to do with council. They have to do with Metro Bus internal deliberations. Is that fair?
Mr. Stewart.
Yeah, through you, Mayor. I would not like to say that we don't have any responsibility as part of this process. However, it's clear that there has been some difference of opinion about what has been agreed in the past. There were some the designs that went through Department of State Growth that were the designs that were delivered that they agreed to at the time. However, how fully we consulted with all parties, including the operators, through that process, obviously, if that had been as fulsome as potentially we could have done, we might have been able to mitigate some of the challenge here. But I think we did, in good faith, deliver the design that we had agreed with Department of State Growth for that bus interchange. Since then, we had feedback that it didn't quite work for the operators, so we are looking to mitigate that. But I wouldn't completely say that we have no responsibility in that process.
Okay. So if we have no responsibility, and I don't want to rehash scrambled eggs that we've gone through, we were contracted by DSG to build that bus stop, and therefore, are we responsible to be consulting with all the stakeholders, or is DSG responsible as the lead, as the head to the contract?
Mr. Stewart.
through you, Mayor. I would say DSG, the DSG contract the operators to deliver the bus services at that site. I would say the primacy of that relationship lies with them. Mm. However, we maybe could have asked the question whether or not they had fully consulted with their operators as part of that process.
Okay, thank you.
Councillor Dean.
Thanks, Mayor. And I just start by apologising. I just realised now I probably could have sent these through to the relevant staff members. I didn't, so I'm just putting them on notice, so I apologise. The first question, though, is just around Mary's Grange, the old nursing home in Toruna, was a bit, has been in the news, as I'm sure some people have noticed, about its redevelopment. And so I'm fielding a lot of questions, and so I'm just wondering if we can get an update on how the nursing home redevelopment is coming along.
Ms. Shikuti.
Through you, Mayor. I will have to take that on notice. I don't have the specific timeline in relation to its assessment, but I believe it's well underway and in its final stages.
Councillor Dean.
Two more questions. Just in relation to the state budget that was handed down last week, there was a couple of points which I'm sure residents of Kingborough would be interested in. The first is just around the commitment to the emergency services hub. There seems to, it's great to see that be committed to. Just wondering if you could, Mayor, maybe update the community on where any potential locations or the progress of that might be.
Thank you. Look, we're still waiting on some detail from the state government in relation to the allocation of those funds because, as you'd be aware from past discussions that we've had since around middle of last year, where the state government have been, have had then at that point in the budget last year, had provided some funding for a business case around the development of an emergency services hub that would incorporate not only police, fire and ambulance, but the SES as well, so we'd have a permanent presence of the SES in Kingborough, which we haven't had. And it was good to see that they initiated that, have been looking at sites. As you'd be aware, Council had previously determined that it would be possible for that to be built on the site of the current works depot, which is diagonally opposite the Bunnings on the Channel Highway. We haven't heard anything further from the state government recently because the amount of money that was in last year's budget was only for the business case. That business case has clearly been finalised now. And I'm interested to see what that $15 million that has been allocated in the budget would be funding because you might recall that Council made a decision that we could not fund ourselves the move of our works depot down to Beretta and that there was substantial funding that would be required to undertake that move. And I haven't had an opportunity to delve into the budget papers yet to see whether there is any other funding in the out years of the budget forward estimates that would provide additional funding to build the hub, because $15 million is not sufficient to relocate the depot and to build the emergency services hub. So at a meeting we had earlier today, the CEO and I discussed reaching out to Minister Felix to ask for confirmation on what that funding would cover and any expected timeframes, because certainly I think the community is very keen to ensure that that project progresses, as are we, but we do have a situation where we have our working council depot on that land at the moment, and there are certain aspects of that land that would need to be decommissioned in an environmental sense. There is a diesel pump on site, so obviously there are a whole lot of ramifications in time in terms of when you can then build on that site. So as soon as I have further information, I'll certainly forward that around to councillors, but it's great to see $15 million in there as a first step towards this becoming a reality.
Great. And just last question, totally agree. Sure, everyone will be very appreciative when that is finally project is delivered. The one that might that also made news about the budget for our perspective was the delaying of the Algona bypass, Kingston bypass, sorry, and the Algona roundabout upgrade. It felt like the last time that was discussed in this chamber, we were so close. The designs have been finalised. My understanding is it looked like it was pretty much ready to go. Have there been any conversations with State Growth as to a new start date, so that we can give some assurance to residents that that project isn't disappearing, as some might be hinting at, that it actually is going to go ahead, and maybe when?
I would hope it's not disappearing, because we all know that the dramas of trying to get around that roundabout, particularly out of Huntingfield at school time and other peak periods, but Mr Reeve, I'm sure, has got some other information for us.
Through you, Mayor, yes, it's imminent. no, I had a meeting with State Growth and the consultant today, actually, fortuitously. So it is still going ahead and well advanced. So the design is almost complete. So we expect that to be completed by December, with the viewpoint that they'll be looking at tendering the project probably towards maybe March or so next year, 2025. So it'll be a project that goes over a couple of years for the whole bypass and Algona roundabout duplication, so it'll go for a little while. But yes, it's still tracking okay. They did have to go through a process with some of the threatened vegetation, so they needed to actually get some federal approval for that, which they're in the process of actually doing. So that's probably caused a few delays in terms of their I guess their start date for the project.
Great. And just to clarify, it sounds like you've probably already answered the question. Just in terms of the actual build, we're still talking about duplication all the way from the roundabout up to the Groningen underpass and upgrades to the roundabout as well. Nothing's changed in that respect.
Yeah, that's correct. So that the actual design itself hasn't changed too much. I mean, most of the discussion I had today was more to do with the active transport links. So that's all looking very positive as well. So yes, it's all going ahead.
Thank you very much.
Councillor Street.
Thank you, Mayor. Just a query in relation to the intersection of Channel Highway and Beach Road, the Kingston Hotel intersection. Recently there's been an accident at that intersection where I'm told somebody travelling in the far left-hand lane who was travelling through the intersection north towards Hobart, towards the Huon Highway, has been in the left-hand lane and attempted to cut across in front of traffic that was travelling in the middle lane, which can only go straight ahead, and caused quite a major accident. The point has been raised with me by somebody who was in the vicinity of that accident at the time that it happened, is that really that left-hand lane does not appear to actually serve any real purpose, because the other side of the intersection goes to one lane within 50 metres or so of the intersection. Have we ever looked at that intersection and whether that's an appropriate method of traffic flow there? And if we haven't, what's the process for doing that?
Mr Reeve.
Through you, Mayor, I'm not so sure whether we've actually looked at it before. I know we have looked in general terms through there, particularly when we were doing some of the Kingston Park works and also the Channel Highway works. But to the specifics of that small left-hand lane there that you're right does end fairly quickly, no, but we certainly can. So I've just made a mental note and make a physical note in a minute there to actually put that on the list to actually investigate and see whether or not we do need to actually continue with that or not. And I can actually provide some feedback to councillors there so they're aware of where we might want to go with that as well.
Thank you.
Councillor Gladrot.
Thank you. I was down at Drew Point over the weekend and I noticed some signs up on the fence regarding the management of pets in an emergency. And I was just wondering what that's all about and if this is a new initiative of council.
Thank you. Yes, it is. So council received a grant from the state government and has worked in conjunction with the RSPCA to let pet owners know what to do in the event of an emergency. So particularly if you have to evacuate, because I think for those councillors who were here when they had the bushfires in the Huon Valley in 2019 and we had a debrief afterwards after our staff had gone down to help out with the Huon Valley Council staff. There were some lessons learned there about people having to evacuate and not being prepared to go to an evacuation centre because they didn't want to leave their homes without their pets. They weren't prepared to leave without their pets. And certainly interstate, there have been a number of studies done that showed, I think it was New South Wales bushfires that they had, where they showed that 43% of people said they wouldn't evacuate in the event of an emergency if they weren't ready to take their pets with them. So the campaign has been designed around some posters that are going up at our dog exercise areas and also at the on the wheelie bins around the dog poo bag dispensers. And we've got information online and we've produced some brochures. And that's really a bit of a checklist of here are the important things if you are, you know, if it's a high fire danger season or we're at risk of flood, here are some important steps that you can take to be ready to evacuate your pet with you, because we do, in the event of an emergency, have facilities, we'll have facilities at evacuation centres where you can take your pets. But things like, you know, where to stay, making sure your cat, I automatically go to a cat, of course, because now I have three. I'm up from one to three. I really am the crazy cat lady. To take your, make sure your cat is microchipped in case it gets out, how to transport your animal, the sorts of things that you should actually have ready with you, like an extra lead and some food, any medication that your pet has. So it's really about trying to make sure, you know, touch wood, we don't have any emergencies that we need to open up our evacuation centres, but just ensuring that residents think about it, because we don't want people to stay home in the event of an emergency and put themselves at danger because they don't know what to do with their pet. So hopefully that helps to get the message out, and we'll be, as we get closer to, I guess, the high fire danger season, we'll be rolling out more messages like that in our social media and in the local papers. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. Your response prompted a question of mine. Are compostable dog poo bags, noting that they are rolling out across the municipality, wondering, and there has been a bit of social media around, you know, you can put your compostable dog poo bag in your FOGO bin, but I'm wondering at the point of the bag collection, if we're at all doing any kind of comms around the fact that, yeah, we've got compostable dog poo bags and that you can put them in your FOGO bin, just as an extra kind of add-on for comms.
Mr. Reeve, your favourite topic?
Through you, Mayor, one of my favourite topics. I just sort of misunderstood the question a little bit. Is this at when they're picking them up from the dog dispensers?
Yes, so at the dog dispensers. Like, I was quite surprised to see it in my local dog dispenser and thought, wow, that's great, compostable dog poo bags are there. But for people who maybe don't follow social media or haven't seen kind of comms or don't know they can put that in their FOGO bin, at the dispenser, can we, the cost of making a sticker, but I guess, I don't know, how are we going to ensure that as many people as possible put those in their FOGO bin?
I guess the dispenser's a location for people to actually dispose of the compostable dog poo bags as well. So are you saying that it's just a collection point to get the to actually get the compostable dog poo bags and then take them home and put them in their bin? Is that what you're referring to?
Yes, but how are we communicating that with people?
Let me interpret that question. She wants to know what the communication plan around getting people to understand what to do with the compostable dog poo bags is.
Noting we have had some social media about it, but for those people who haven't, are we putting anything at the point of where people collect their bag from?
We're not at the moment, but I'm happy to take that on notice and have a look at it.
Thank you. Any further questions? If not, we'll move along. That takes us to questions on notice and councillors. At the time the agenda was compiled, there were no questions on notice and councillors. And still on page 4, petition still being actioned, there are no petitions still being actioned. And at the time the agenda was compiled, no petitions had been received. Takes us to page 5, payment of councillor expenses and provision of facilities policy update 2.1 with the recommendation on page 6. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. Mover in Councillor Gladewright and a seconder in Councillor Fox. Councillor Gladewright.
Thank you. The purpose of this report is to present the updated policy 2.1, payment of councillors' expenses and provision of facilities policy for council approval. Elected members are entitled to be reimbursed for certain reasonable expenses whilst carrying out their duties and functions. A small increase in the monthly cap for IT and communication expenses has been included, and other changes are only editorial in nature. It is a requirement of the Local Government Act 1993 and the Local Government General Regulations 2015 that we have this policy, and I will be lending my support to it.
Thank you. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. Just a point that, you know, we all probably have a bit of a conflict of interest because it is relating to some relating to us, noting that it is a requirement of the Local Government Act, but in regards to the increase of expenses and that sort of details, just wondering how that came about.
Mr. Spinks.
Through you, Mayor. It's probably just worth backtracking slightly. Despite appearances, given the few suggested changes to the policy, actually spent quite a bit of time on this, so did quite a bit of comparing to other council policies. I certainly didn't select all the other Tasmanian councils, but I did sort of select a fair number of, you know, five or six to compare against. And in essence, the increase in the limit seemed appropriate in comparison to what other councils are offering, and also in relation to the claims that are being made by councillors to date.
Councillor Midgley.
Thank you. Thank you very much for looking into that and that comparison and the work that went into that as well.
Councillor Richardson.
Thank you. I just wanted to ask a question about the process of claiming. So particularly with the electronic communication allowance, what evidence is required to be presented when claiming, when making this claim?
Mr. Spinks.
Through you, Mayor. Look, those claims don't come across my desk, so I'm not 100% certain, but I would imagine it would entail copies of invoices and receipts and that kind of thing.
Councillor Dean.
Thank you. I note that a lot of work has been gone into comparing what other councils in Tasmania or Australia do. Is there a possibility to provide maybe or explain in this day and age when obviously we're so interconnected, people got internet connections and phones, what the underlying justification, I suppose, and those other policies that you came across was, and basically going back to not just what other councils do, but in terms of first principles approach, what we think or why we think this one is necessarily still relevant in this day and age.
Mr. Spinks, I hope you understood the question because I did not.
Let me ask by this. How relevant is this policy still in relation to specifically, sorry, I should have made that more specific, in relation to what Councillor Richardson is talking about in terms of the $200 IT or phone or internet allowance? How relevant do you think that still is in this day and age?
Look, ultimately the policy is a matter for Council, obviously. In doing that comparison, what I discovered was that in broad terms, what we're providing under our policy is generally consistent with elsewhere. As you would expect, there's always going to be differences between policies. It's probably fair to say that our policy is a little less prescriptive than some others. So ours is silent on some matters, for example. In terms of relevance, my view would be the matters that are provided for remain relevant. In relation to the IT in particular, which I think you might be getting at,
Look, it provides for the reimbursement of fixed and permanent sort of landline costs. It also provides for the reimbursement of internet plans and mobile devices and what have you. So I think taken together, it seems reasonable.
Councillor Dean.
Look, I think my own view is that I just don't think it's in specifically related to the $200 allowance. I don't really think that's relevant anymore. I think most people that are looking to become councillors, I would imagine, have a phone already, or they would have an internet connection at home. And at $200 each, I think it can add up. I'm reading the room, probably not the time or place to seek to remove it, but I think it's a bit outdated and probably could be done away with. For the rest of the policy, I appreciate a lot of work has been put into it, and that we compare it with other councils, but I think it's worth having a conversation at some point in the future about whether this aspect of the policy is actually still necessary.
Thank you for your contribution. If I can make a comment on that, it's probably the sort of discussion that would be relevant at a LEGAT meeting, because it's a wider sector issue. It's not just one that would impact our council, and what we're doing here is in line with other councils. I think there is, an equity issue in terms of if you have somebody from a very, very low income, who perhaps somebody who's on a pension who wants to run for council yet requires all these facilities in order to help them do their jobs, given the low level of reimbursement that people receive as councillors, particularly if you're from a small council, then I think that this sort of thing is very appropriate. I note, for example, that our policy includes provision for somebody to be paid what is classed now as dependent care. That was something when I first came onto council, when I was a single parent of two young children, that I didn't have family members that could look after them, that I claimed a minimal amount to assist with my childcare costs while I was attending council meetings. And since that time, it has been broadened out so that if a councillor now or in the future has somebody at home that they are dependent on their care, so it could be another adult with a disability, then they can pay somebody to come in and do that respite while they're attending their council duties. And we did have a discussion at the LGAT meeting a fortnight ago about that, and it was widely recognised that we shouldn't have financial barriers to people from low incomes running for council, and we want to have as diverse a group sitting around the table as we possibly can. And so I think you need to balance that with looking at, well, are these, just because there is an allowance available there doesn't mean that people are claiming it. It is an allowance if people wish to claim it. And if you don't wish to claim it, if you think, well, I have a phone anyway, then you don't need to. So it's not an additional payment that is made on top of what we receive as an allowance at a flat rate, whether or not you have a phone. It is an optional thing for people to, I guess, a safety net to assist them in doing their duties if they require that. But I'm happy for you to ask another question about it if you want.
No, like, just to be clarified, I'm talking not about dependence and that kind of thing. This is really about having a phone and an internet connection at home. By no way do I want to strip any of the other entitlements away, but I'm not going to move any amendment to it. It's just my personal view on that one. Thanks.
Thank you. Any further questions? Councillor Antoli.
My only contribution is I'm very grateful to Council for always pushing, always promoting further education, and I found that the Council's very generous in offering, you know, to go to conferences and things that are relevant and make and there's I've never had any pushback. I personally don't claim any of the things that have been mentioned. The odd trip to Bruny Island because I've been asked to go there and do something, but to me that's just a personal choice. But I am grateful for I've never had questions asked when I've said, look, what about this bit of education or that? I've been very grateful. I actually don't think enough of us around the table probably take you up on those offers, probably because we're so busy and we're all got other jobs. But I do want to pass on that appreciation and say we need more of it.
Thank you. Well, you can do your training modules for free online, as we know, from Learn to Lead, and we can be the leading counsellor. We've risen to number 3 in the table of 29 councils, so keep doing those modules, please. Any further discussion? Councillor Bain.
Thank you, Mayor. I guess the only other thing to point out is that all the allowances that are claimed are made available to the public in reports on our website, so it's certainly not hidden.
Yep, and certainly, yeah, thank you for making that point. We do make sure that, we are required to under the Act, that the payment of any of these allowances are reported, I think, every month, if I'm not mistaken, every month. Is that right, Mr. Spinks?
No, it's quarterly.
Oh, quarterly, yeah. There you go. Yep. Quarterly, so it is available for the community to look at if they would wish. Is there any further discussion? Councillor Gladewright, did you want to sum up? No? If not, I'll put the recommendation. Moved by Councillor Gladewright, seconded by Councillor Fox. All those in favour? Against? Motion is carried. Takes us to page 18, resolutions from the Disability Inclusion and Access Advisory Committee, with a recommendation on page 20. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder. Normally, as the chair of the committee, I would move it, but I can't from the chair. So Councillor Fox, who's also a member, thank you very much, and a seconder in Councillor Midgley. Councillor Fox.
Thank you, Mayor. At a meeting on the 14th of August, the committee adopted a motion that proposed amendments to the Disability Inclusion Access Advisory Committee Action Plan as circulated be accepted and put up to Council for approval. Members of the DIAAC raised concerns about elderly people being targeted by people door knocking and purporting to be canvassing for charities. Council is unable to take any action in relation to this matter as it falls under the jurisdiction of the state government. However, accordingly, the committee resolved that Council writes to the Minister of Community Affairs to recommend that door-to-door fundraising and sales be outlawed in Tasmania for the reason of the safety of the residents, and also that Council writes another letter to the Minister of Transport and the Minister of Disability Services and all other parties representing the State Parliament to raise the issue of the lack of availability of wheelchair-accessible taxis, which was another concern. Despite Council's advocacy on this issue, there continues to be a statewide shortage of maxi taxis, resulting in a requirement for people with wheelchairs to book a week in advance and there with no guarantee of a return trip. According to some of the members, they were left stranded for hours without getting any taxi, and sitting in a wheelchair for that long, for example, is totally unacceptable. And we've asked that the correspondence be sent again and highlighting these issues. So I recommend the motion. Thank you,
Councillor Fox. Any further contributions? Councillor Dean.
I just was hoping to get a little bit more information around the request to write to the state government on, supposing to try and... ban door-to-door charity workers or fundraising. Is this something that's done elsewhere?
I'm not aware of the regulations in other states, but members of the committee raised this because of the fact that they believe that there are vulnerable members of our community where somebody comes around and door knocks purporting to be on a chair for a charity and is very persistent, and those people feel quite pressured and they hand over cash or their card and they make a donation and there's no way of really verifying whether they are indeed from the charity they're purporting to be or whether they're people who are scamming. And we do see it from time to time mentioned in the paper that there are people going around and pretending to be from charities and flashing some sort of ID that's probably just printed off their printer at home. I know for the charity that I work for, Cystic Fibrosis Tasmania, I received a phone call in our office the other day from somebody who lived in the Launceston area who said, did you have people going door-to-door, door-knocking? And I said, no, we don't do that. And they said, well, somebody has just come around asking for a donation to Cystic Fibrosis Tasmania and, you know, and was pressuring us and we felt intimidated. And so we, you know, we very concerned that that sort of thing does happen on a reasonably, I'd like to say only sporadic, you know, like occasional basis, but there are clear instances of that happening. But also elderly people being pressured into, you know, solar panels. There's a lot of door-to-door salesmen who come around with very heavy-handed tactics, and before they know it, they've signed up for something that they may not really understand they're signing up to. So it was the view of the committee that we wanted to write a letter and ask for a review of the guidelines around these things to ban them. We didn't, because we considered the matter at the meeting that was raised in general business, we hadn't had time to research to see whether those things are banned in other states, but that there's sufficient concern to ask the state government to look at it.
Thanks. So it just sounds like we're writing to the minister to outlaw a practice based on, you know, the actions of minority scammers, those that are pressuring, and I fully understand that argument, but we've got the vast majority of charities that go to door-to-door to raise large, you know, that's how that a lot of them are funded, so they can do the work they do, is from door-to-door fundraising. So we just seem to be, it just doesn't seem to quite make sense to me that we'd write to outlaw something that, on the basis of scammers and those that are trying to be charity workers, but then we've got a whole industry of charities that go around, do the right thing, try and get money from people on the door. Sure, it's not everyone's cup of tea to open the door and have your lunch interrupted and ask for money, sure, but it's all perfectly legal and they've got a whole bunch of rules that they have to abide by. So I can't really see why would we jump, because of some scammers, to let's ban the entire charity door-to-door fundraising industry.
I think there are other ways that those charities can approach people by setting up at shopping centres and supermarkets, which is far less intrusive than going door-to-door and feeling intimidated by, you know, somebody who is in your premises and not understanding whether they are, you know, verified, you know, legitimate charity workers or not. It's not as common these days as it used to be. A lot of the charities have moved away from it because, you know, now you have Square devices, but years ago, before there was the onset of those, there was not as many people having cash, and so it became less lucrative. I think there are, you know, I think there are other opportunities for those charities to be out there and to fundraise. And, you know, good old, we've all done it at one stage or another, good old tin rattling in a, on a, the side of a street or something like that, where people come to you rather than you go to them, I think is a far better way. The other thing that it was put to us at the meeting, and it was from, I think, from memory, a representative of the committee who was also on the safety committee, is that some people don't know whether, you know, if they are scam charity workers, whether they're just coming to eyeball your house and case your house ahead of their, you know, to work out, oh, this is a little old lady who lives on her own and, oh, that's where she keeps the keys. I can see the keys to her, you know, to her car. She keeps them in there and return later. So there were a whole range of issues that were put forward as a result of that discussion. The microphones have gone off again. You'll have to, yeah.
So thanks for the context. I still just don't understand why we'd be writing to outlaw what is a lawful industry for the actions of the unlawful. We could also do that. You know, whether it's banned or not, I could go and imitate someone, a builder, and seek out where their keys are hidden. But I note this is just a letter to, on behalf of council, which I guess I suppose some kind of board member. But these are just minutes. I don't really want to. I don't think we should be outlawing fundraising activities of charities that do fantastic work. It does. It says the council write to the Minister of Community Affairs to recommend that door-to-door fundraising and sales be outlawed in Tasmania for the reason of the safety of the residents. So I don't really want to support that. So could I just seek advice to bring in this minister?
So you can just vote against it. But just to be clear that the way the motion here is written in C, it is... raising the safety concerns around door-to-door fundraising and sales in Tasmania, especially for vulnerable community members, which is not... what was in the resolution has been slightly changed in the recommendation here, so just focus on that. Yeah. Any further discussions? I just want to add something, because I do feel very passionate about this, and I'm extremely frustrated... The issue of the lack of wheelchair accessible taxis in Tasmania is an absolute disgrace. We have two members of the Access Committee who are totally reliant on wheelchair taxis to take them to everything that they do. And we've heard repeated stories over the last 5 or 6 years about how they've been left stranded. Either the taxi hasn't turned up at the start and they've missed medical appointments, or they get picked up, taken to their appointment, and then the taxi gets a more lucrative ride with somebody who's not in a wheelchair, maybe a group of, you know, people coming back from an event somewhere, and so they take that over picking the person up at their medical appointment, and they then get stranded. And we're talking about, in some cases, large powered chairs that can't simply fold up and go in the back of a regular car, nor can the person be taken out very easily. I have written repeatedly to various state government ministers about this. The Access Committee had come up with a range of suggestions as to how this problem could be alleviated by having... incentives for more people, money put towards upgrading existing taxis to be wheelchair compatible, incentives for financial incentives for the drivers to actually take the wheelchair fares. But importantly, we need more of them, because this is happening all over Tasmania, where it is absolutely disgraceful, particularly in winter time, when you've got somebody who can't get home, you know, from their appointment and is stuck outside and has to wait and wait and wait and make repeated phone calls. So I get really frustrated, because every time I write, I get a letter back which says, yes, thank you, this is, yeah, we have done a few things and we know it's a problem and we've done this, this and this. Well, the reality is it's not working, because our members are still telling us this story. So I'll get off my soapbox now, but I just needed to say that, because I'm very passionate about this, and it's a, you know, it is a human rights issue pretty much, because they're being denied access to transport. Okay, so any further discussion after I've just... vented? No. Councillor Fox, did you want to sum up?
I think you've done that beautifully. Thank you.
Thank you. I'll put the recommendation as moved by Councillor Fox, seconded by Councillor Midgley. All those in favour? Against? Motion is carried unanimously. Thank you. Takes us to page 33 with a recommendation on page 34. We're looking at Kingborough Community Grants. Can I have a mover and a seconder, please? Moved Councillor Antoli, seconded Councillor Midgley. Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Mayor. I want to thank our Coordinator of Community Services and Hub for the report. They recommend allocating $21,550 in grant funding under the Kingborough Community Grants Program for 24-25. This program aims to support not-for-profit community groups and organisations in implementing projects that enhance community well-being. 11 applications were received, totalling $30,550 in requests, with the recommendations for funding of 8 projects. Grants are capped at 50% of project costs, with a maximum grant of $3,000 per recipient. The unallocated funds of $8,450 will be reserved for quick response grants throughout the year. I'm assuming that's through you, Mayor. Is that how quick response grants work?
No, quick response grants go through our community services team.
Okay.
So it's somebody who, an organisation that has something come up during the year, so they might decide that they want to do a festival or something like that. It's a very quick turnaround for grants. They're assessed against some proper criteria by our team.
Thank you. The recommendations await council approval, and the successful recipients will be notified post-endorsement. The program complies with statutory requirements and it engages with the community through extensive advertising and consultation. No identified risks are associated with the funding allocations. I do have a question or two, if I may.
Yes, certainly.
Thank you. The Stitching and Beyond, so they put in a $3,000, so that is the grant number 3. They put in a $3,000 application, and it's for assistance with room hire and website updates. Can I ask why, even at least for the website upgrades, they weren't awarded something?
Ms. Shakuti.
Through you, Mayor. Thank you. So Stitching and Beyond actually received funding last year, and it's to fund ongoing operational costs. And another key concern that we had was that only 20% of their members actually were from Kingborough as well.
Good response, thank you. I agree with that. I had a few concerns about item number one. I don't share these concerns, but I'm going to voice it regardless. There was concern from the community that we are funding a religious festival. What's the council's response to that?
Ms. Shakuti.
Through you, Mayor. That's a good question, and I would go to say that if you look around the state and the country, there are many Diwali festivals which are a general celebration of their culture that are very inclusive to all of the community, and we see this as a beneficial and inclusive event that we can be holding in Kingborough.
Councillor Antolli.
So from your point of view, it's more of a cultural celebration than a religious proselytising one?
Through you, Mayor. Yes, that's how we have assessed this application.
I must admit, I have been to a couple of Diwali festivals and I did not want to then become a Hindu straight afterwards, so I seem to be safe from that, the dangers of that proselytising venture. And my only other question is regarding the Multiply Chinese Tasmania. I don't even know what that means.
That is the name of their group.
Yeah, it strikes me as a very odd title. But anyway, it's assistance with activity costs for attendees at the Kingston Reformed Church. Can I get a bit of clarity on what on earth was behind that application?
Ms. Shakuti.
Through you, Mayor, my understanding is that it is to assist new members to the Chinese community to come along and participate in activities at the church, to, I suppose, be welcome to the community, provide connection, etc. The reason for not funding is that it's seeking to fund ongoing costs, which is an eligibility criteria, and the application was not complete, so there were no itemised costs and no quotes provided, which is a requirement.
And my final question is, so we've received all of these applications with only about 3 not funded. Is that correct?
Correct.
Or were there more applications?
No, this is all.
That's very generous. So basically the council has a huge hit rate of funding requests at the maximum dollar value. So these people are obviously very good, the majority of them, are writing the application correctly. Fantastic. I personally think, and we can debate this next year in the budget, that the grant program should be higher, but I do want to thank the generosity of the council's committee in funding so fully these projects. Sounds great.
Thanks, Councillor Ntoli. Councillor Dean.
A question. I might have my recollections wrong, but I recall last time this came before us that we requested that a little blurb come just with an explanation for... because I, this look, this process...
Explanation is a, for what, sorry?
As to each, as into why it was approved or denied. Just because I... Look, okay. This is a merit-based process,
sure.
Which... We haven't got the applications, so I can't really comment. Like Councillor Antelli's point out some questions which make absolute sense when you hear the responses, but you know, maybe I might just wrong. I can't remember if I'm actually wrong or not.
I do recall that.
I can't recall it, but my head's a muddle of surplus information. But I think probably what would be helpful for everyone and to make this process a bit smoother would be, when there is a recommendation for no funding, that there is an brief explanation as to why it is not being provided. So perhaps if Ms. Shakuti, you could make a note for that for the next grant round. Any further discussion? Councillor Gladewright.
Yeah, I just wanted to congratulate everybody who's been successful. It's always really wonderful reading all the applications. That gives us a really nice insight into the rich, vibrant community that we have here. And, well done to everybody.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Councillor Ntoli, you don't want to sum up? I'll put the recommendation. Moved by Councillor Ntoli, seconded by Councillor Midgley. All those in favour? Against? Motion is carried. Takes us to page 39, financial report, with the recommendation on page 41. Looking for a mover and a seconder. I reckon I've got a mover in Councillor Bain and a seconder in Councillor Gladewright. Councillor Bain.
Thank you, Mayor. So the report before us is the financial report August 2024. Overall, year to date, the underlying result is $536,000 to the positive, which is good. But there is a comment there in the report that August is early in the new financial year, and there are a number of timing differences where expenditure is yet to occur or where expenditure for the full year is made in July, August. As far as revenue, the rates revenue is $117,000 over budget. The statutory fees and fines are $100,000 over budget due to a large development application received in August. And user fees are $83,000 over budget, mainly due to the Kimberley Sports Centre. So the revenue space, we're tracking very well at the moment. As far as the expenditure goes, major variations to date are employee costs, material and services, and depreciation. However, the majority of those are timing related, so likely to correct themselves as the year progresses. So I think so far so good. Just in the capital workspace, I had a couple of questions. The local roads and community infrastructure, which I think is number 32 to 36, looks like this might be some grant funding, some new expenditure, so I was wondering if we can get some information on this. Is it a combination of a few projects we've got on the go from carry forward and for the future years?
Mr. Reeve.
So for our LRCI funding for this year, the two that we've identified is to add some additional money into some of the LATM work that we're doing down Kingston Beach, and following on from that, also to look at completing another section of the foreshore path along Kingston Beach as well at the same time. So they're the two projects that have been identified for this year.
So just to clarify, if I can, Mayor?
Yep.
Those ones have been brought forward from out years due to the funding being available?
Yeah, that's correct. So the LRCI funding had been kicking around for a little while, so the Fed sort of gave a little bit of a longer lead time on it. And I guess we'd sort of been holding on to that with the viewpoint of looking at where we can actually best utilise those funds. And I guess we've got to the stage where, you know, a particular project there which might be something which we could actually value add to didn't materialise, so that we've actually picked two projects there which are deliverable and ones that we can undertake in the timeframes given. So.
Thank you. Further questions? Councillor Bain?
Yeah, just the last question was we've seen the state budget come out this week, so I assume the election commitments for Kingborough will be added to the budget as those agreements come to pass?
Yes. Yes. That'd be yes.
Excellent.
Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Mayor. A few questions. On page 42 of our report, it's the first page of the financial report. Underneath the word financial report is the 1st of July 2023. Is that a typo? Okay, I'll let you guys fix it. Thank you.
I love a proofreader. You are.
I'm not trying to be
you're
smart.
You're my spirit animal.
I'm not trying to be smart, Alec, or anything like that. I have a question about the large DA application fee that came in unexpectedly. What sort of an what sort of a development was that for?
CEO.
Yeah, through you, Mayor. It wasn't necessarily unexpected, but it hadn't been planned for in the phasing of the timing. Because it is not yet in the public domain, I won't go into the nature of what that development is for, but we will, once that becomes something that we can talk about publicly, we can have that conversation.
All right, thank you.
It's not the High Performance Centre for the AFL. I'm just going to say that before anybody wants to go
such
and
a
like,
shame.
Tell the Mercury that. It isn't, such unfortunately.
Such a shame. Page 48. Can I have an interpretation of the figures there, in particular the net surplus figure? It seems to be out of context. I'm not fully understanding it. So the 2.934 mil, that's the expected result at the end of the upcoming financial year. Is that correct?
Mr. Spinks.
Yes, so Mayor, just by way of explanation, what we have is what we call our total profit and loss, if we want to call it that, and then we have our, what was called the underlying. The underlying removes certain items of revenue and expense which we deem to be sort of non-recurring or sort of one-off, so that we're left with a more sustaining or recurring indication of our operating result, and so it's the underlying result which we concentrate most fully on, and that's the 2.9 deficit that we came into the budget year with.
So that's the deficit we've inherited from the previous P&L, is that right?
No, when we set the budget for this year back in June, yep. That budget was for an underlying deficit of $2.9
million. Right, that's the forecast deficit at the end of the year. Okay, mm-hmm. Thank you. Then what does it mean, forecast, what does it mean there at the bottom? Adjustments not affecting the underlying surplus, and then it says net surplus of minus 1.3.
Yeah, so the difference between the 2.9 and the 1.3, some of those items that I've just spoken about that don't carry forward. But we haven't made any adjustments, only 2 months into those numbers. So that's why there's nothing listed there.
Ah, okay. And can I ask, in your opinion, are we on track?
Yes, as has been stated in the introduction by Councillor Bain, both revenue and expense is slightly better than budget at the moment. So far, so good.
Thank you, Mr. Spinks.
Further questions? Councillor Richardson.
Yeah, just following on from that, getting a clarification on page 49. So the summary of operating statement for all. It's showing at the very bottom there that we are, if I'm reading that correctly, a $1.8 million better position than forecast. Either that?
Mr. Spinks.
That is correct, but that's at the total profit and loss level. At the underlying result, which is to say, which is the one we concentrate most on, we haven't made any adjustments there.
Yeah, no, I understand. But the budget that we're measuring ourselves against, and which gives us that $1.8 million variance, is the total budget, right?
Correct. And the reason for that major positive variance on the bottom line there is a capital grant that we've carried forward from prior year.
Okay. So given that we are 2 months in, $1.8 million better off, how do you see that panning out for the rest of the year?
Mr. Spinks.
It's too early to say, Mayor. There's a reason we haven't made any revisions only 2 months into the financial year. I think we'll wait to the mid-year budget review unless anything sort of significant arises between now and then.
Further questions? I've got a question on page 46 on our reserves. So there's $1 million in the infrastructure replacement reserve. We set that up in the previous budget, so in the 23-24, we put $1 million in for the first time, and then I thought we were putting $1 million in subsequent years, so I don't understand why it's only reflecting $1 million and not $2 million.
Yeah, through you, Mayor. Good question. The policy that was adopted at the time said that the allocation into that reserve would be determined at the end of the financial year, and so the allocation for 24-25, the current year, hasn't been made as yet.
Okay. So it will, right, so we will decide towards the closer to 30 June 25, yep, how much goes in there. Okay, thank you. Any further questions? Councillor Bain, did you want to sum up?
Oh, I've got a question.
Oh, sorry, Councillor Antolli.
I'm trying to find it. There was... thank you. The formatting on some of the pages is chopped off at the left and you can't read what it's trying to say. My question is around page 45. Towards the bottom, it says that borrowings are from an organisation, and I'm not sure if I'm reading it. Does it say TasCorp?
Correct.
Okay. Who are they?
Mr. Spinks.
TasCorp is the state government borrowing authority.
Thank you. All right, thank you very much. I don't know if maybe we could just sort of...
fix that formatting for the next time.
Yeah, because we often find it's cut off on the left, and I don't have your intellect, Mr. Spinks, so I can't sometimes work out who these people are.
Thank you. Okay, I'm going to put the recommendation moved by Councillor Bain, seconded by Councillor Glade-Wright. All those in favour? Against? Motion is carried unanimously. Takes us on to appendices at 15.5. Are there any questions? No. Okay. Thank you. I'll look for a mover and a seconder that they be noted. Moved Councillor Glade-Wright and seconded Councillor Bain. All those in favour? Against? Motion is carried. Notices of motion, there were none. And now we go to confirmation of items to be dealt with in closed session, which will be confirmation of minutes, applications for leave of absence, current court matters and CEO's performance review and KPIs. Looking for a mover and a seconder, please. Moved Councillor Fox, seconded Councillor Glade-Wright. All those in favour? Against? Motion is carried. Thank you very much for your attendance this evening and for those who have been listening at home. In accordance with Kingborough Council Meetings Audio Recording Guidelines Policy, recording of the open session of the council meeting will now cease at 6:52 p.m. Thank you very much.